Accession number 21112, Reel 2.
Reel 2.
Well, we stayed at, as I say, we was at this place called Burnaville, and there again we were sleeping in a farmyard again. And and we did a few repairs there, because the brand carriage and that, they were out on exercise, you know. And we did what with them was change bogey wheels, bearings in the bogey wheels of the carriers, not the tanks. But there again, now and again, they'd fling a track off. I remember one night we had to go right through a wood up onto a track where this this carrier had shed its track, and we had to lay in the chalk. The chalky, it was all wet chalk, you know, and where he fell, and we had to disconnect this then and put him back on his track again. And
But did they often throw off tracks?
Well, not really. It's only once they got into this sort of stuff like they were in that day. But otherwise, they didn't throw them all that much. But that's about the only thing we did was in the bogey wheels, in the new bearings in the bogey wheels, and these tracks at Boars. We never did, at Burnaville, rather. We didn't do much else. But we were sleeping in this farmyard, I know, because I had the stable boys bed up in the stable itself, you know. There were no horses there, but then the blokes were sleeping in the stable, you know. And then right opposite the farmyard was a big cafe, you know, and they go in there every night and sample the bottles on.
Really? Was it deserted or was it still operating?
Oh, no, the cafe was still there, you know.
Oh, right.
And they used to go in there a lot, you know, and well, so did the locals.
Right.
And, of course, when we went there with my son-in-law, it'd been turned into a house, and I was just going to walk in.
Yeah. What was your reception by the local people?
Oh, they were all right. They were very good, yeah.
They were quite friendly, were they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't do a lot. I used to go walking around the village at night times, and used to walk into St. Paul, a place called St. Paul, which was a fair distance from there, but we used to walk in there over night time, you know, or afternoon, but we did a lot. They decided to do away with a lot of the Impress vehicles, and they got brand new Bedford 15 underweights.
Yeah.
And we had to condemn these wagons, you know.
What, the Impressed ones?
Yeah. On the move, when we moved from Boars to this place, one of the Impressed, that old guy, had broke down, and we towed it into St. Paul. At least it's some civvy. Lorry towed it into St. Paul, right in the middle of the square there, and we had to go and see if we could repair it, and the cylinder and gasket had gone, and I said to the gendarme that was there, it's all right to let the oil, the water out, and some, you know, because it was filled up with water, and he said, yeah, let it go, and there was all this oil and water running down the street, but he didn't care. Anyway, we made in gasket out of some halite that we had, and try to get the thing going, and we couldn't start it, so there was we found out there was a workshop just down the road in St. Paul, and they come up and got a tow wagon on it and towed it round, and as it went round, it nearly went into a house because he had the tow ropes wrong, you see. But anyway, they got it in. Eventually, they couldn't get it started, so we left it there in the workshop at St. Paul. Well, eventually, it came back to Boars, it was repaired, you see, and it was running all right. So our office, old Lieutenant Stewart, he was the technical officer of the 1st Flight and 4th, he said, let's take her on the road and see if we can condemn it, you see. So he and I were sat up in this thing, and the driver was going on, and he kept pulling and pulling on the street. I said, what's the matter with it? He said, well, the blowing thing is stiff or something. So we'd done about, I don't know, how many miles, and we looked back down the road, and you could see these rubber tracks, and what had happened, it was out of track, and this worn the tires right through, so we were able to condemn it that way, you see.
So if it was condemned, what happened to it?
Well, I suppose it eventually went back to England, and they replaced it with a 1500 weight Bedford, you know. And that's what we finished up with. They got rid of all the impressed vehicles to finish up with.
What did you think of the 1500 weight Bedford?
Oh, yeah, it was quite a good truck.
So were you following the forces round repairing their vehicles, or were they bringing them to you, or you were just standing by?
Well, actually, you see that every squadron had their unit fitter, and they also had a supplemental reserve fitter as well, you see. So they did a lot of repairs themselves. It was only when they got stuck that they sort of come to us. I mean, that's what happened, you know.
What was the food like all this time? I mean, the weather was dreadful and your accommodation wasn't very good.
Well, I don't remember much about the food now, you know. I suppose it was all right. It must have been still alive anyway. But, I mean, towards the end, you know, before Dunkirk, it got pretty dodgy because we didn't have any food at all, just biscuits, dry biscuits and so on.
So did you stay at Burneville?
We stayed there until April.
Right.
And then we got taken out of the 51st Highland Division, and they were going to form the 1st Reconnaissance Brigade.
Oh, yeah.
Down at Ivry La Bataille. And that was halfway between Paris and Rouen. It was sort of a spa place near Avro. And we moved down there. It was a nice place. That was Ivry, Ivry La Bataille, Bataille. Ivry La Bataille.
And you were part of a reconnaissance?
Well, they were going to form it. Yeah. It never got to that stage eventually. Mm-hmm. They were going to do it with the first fight. Well, it's in that diary anyway. We were going to do it with the 1st East Riding Yeomanry. Mm-hmm. And the, who was the other one? The 1st Border and Scottish Borders and that. But it never got to that stage because the lot blew up, and that was it. Because we didn't do any repairs there at all because they were just sort of holding for this upon this reconnaissance brigade, you see.
Yeah.
It was quite a nice place, that was, you know, and they used to have the band out at night time, the Fife and Four for band.
Okay.
Yeah, oh yeah. And it was in play football matches and all sorts there. It was quite good.
Yeah.
But we were there then till the lot blew up, you know, May the night. Well, I was going on leave that night.
Really?
I still got my pass. Yeah. I still got the original pass there.
Yeah. Well, up to that time, what had you heard of the war? I mean, did you hear any fighting or know what was going on?
No, well, there wasn't much going on, was there? I mean, there was nothing much going on at all. We used to go when we were at Boers, our officer used to take me in he'd always have me with him when he was going anywhere, and he used to take me in the bathroom, and he'd go in the officer's club there and mess about and leave me on my todd sort of thing, you know. And but there's the original, I've still got the original leave pass here.
Oh, yeah, never used.
Never used.
Yeah,
I've made a copy of it, but it's the original one.
Yes, yeah.
And that's my ABC, you know.
Oh, yeah.
What's the name one?
Got everything.
Oh, yeah, my daughter did all this.
Yeah, that's lovely, isn't it?
But that's when we went over to Normandy, top secret. I was in charge of that at that time.
Yeah.
But anyway, that night... yeah, that's the part of Hanover and that. But anyway, that night that when we were at Ivry La Bataille, they decided to start some leave, you see. Well, I was one of the fortunate ones that was going on leave. And we got on this train, I think it was at Avro, and in carriages, and then they put us on farther up the line on cattle trucks, you know, one of those old cattle trucks. There was a WO2 out of A squadron and a sergeant out of one of the other squadrons, three of us in this cattle truck. And in the middle, then as we were going up, we could hear the air raid sirens going, and I said to him, I said, blimey, I've never heard them over here before, and we hadn't, you know. And he said, oh, well, just to practice, I suppose, you know. So anyhow, we stopped at some station in the middle of the night, I don't know where it was, and I pulled the truck open, and there was an RTO chap on the platform, and I said, he said, oh, that's all right, Bill. He said, you're all right. Hang on, you're all right for Cherbourg, so we shut the door and got down and do it again, you know. And then at 5 o'clock in the morning, this AQMS got up and he pulled the truck doors open, and it was a lovely morning, just like this. And he pulled it back, he said, God, Bill, he said, smell that air, we must be getting near the sea now. And the next station we run into was Le Mans, 100 miles from Cherbourg. They diverted the train in the night, you see. And of course we were going back, they took us down to some French barracks, and then we stayed there all day, and then they put us on in a carriage on the end of a goods train to go back to Ivry La Bataille again, or Avro, and I don't know how many times we shunned up and down different places, you know, until we got back to there. And of course they were all packed up ready to move up to Belgium. Mm. And then of course we went straight up to the end of Belgium, and we just gone into Tourney just before it was bombed in Belgium. Yeah.
Right. So you went into Tourney.
Oh yes, we had to go through Tourney. They were allocated the other side of Tourney to take up position, but one of the tanks had broken down right in Tourney, right alongside the railway there, and I had clutch trouble, and our officer took me there, and I got it going again, and it went on, and then he took me up into Tourney, up to the cathedral there, and it was all on fire, you know. Oh yeah,
it was supposed to be quite a sight.
Mm.
Were you amazed to see this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was cars upside down on the railway. There were trains upside down where they bombed it, you know. And the cathedral was on fire, and they just left the hoses in the road. There they were in the road. And I can always remember, there was shops, the glass was melting in the windows, you know. And there was a little shop under an alcove. And it was full of Rolls razors, you remember the old Rolls razors? And they were full of that, and there wasn't any touched at all, that wasn't even touched. No, I always remember that. But anyway, we come on way from there because it was got so hot, you know, it was sweltering hot. Oh, yeah. And then we moved up the other side of Tourney. I don't know how long we were there, not long, and they had to get back over the canal because they were going to blow up the bridge, so we had to come on out of there. And then of course after that we seemed to be going around in circles around Lille and one place and the other.
Yeah.
And
were you following?
Oh yeah, because we were attached to HQ, we had to go with them, you see, that was the thing.
Yeah.
Otherwise we would have got lost, you know.
Yeah. Was it quite frightening?
Not really. Well, it was, because you had to watch out for these women bombers coming down, these Dornier, they used to come down HR, you know, and no, yeah, it was not very good.
Yeah. Mm. So you were on the move for a long time?
Oh, yeah, well, we were going around in circles to me, you know, for a while.
When did you realise that you probably have to be evacuated?
Let me think now. Well, not till we were up at Cassel, because before that, they were going to take over Wood near Haysbrook, and when they got up there, the Germans was in there, so we had to get out a bit quick. And I mean, we went to Armentières and all over the place, you know. But of course, we never see anything of the actual action because we were a repair crowd, you know. But I mean, I know with the tanks. So I knew one or two of the drivers of the tanks, and they said they were absolutely useless, and one or two of them ditched them on purpose, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because they knew they weren't any damn good.
Yeah.
And that was it. But we had one or two narrow streets, because every time there was a plane, when you was moving, you had to be so many vehicles apart and as soon as there was a noise, you would jump out and down into the ditch, you know.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you did that quite a lot.
Oh, yeah. Then we finished up at Cassell there. And
what was it like when you got there?
That had been bombed, but we were just on the outskirts by a chateau, in a field by a chateau there. And I know we had two Bren carriers there. One had engine trouble, one had gearbox trouble. We were going to take the gearbox out of the one that was okay and put it in the one that wouldn't. And the unit fitter and myself, we was one either side, sat either side of the carrier doing this job, and our WO2, he come up the road, and they'd been out and robbed a cafe, disoccupied cafe, and got a big bottle of hooch. I don't know what it was, but my God, it was some strong stuff, and he give it to him. That's an old dad, no one I would ever swing, and he'd ever swing.
But that cheered you up then?
Well, we never finished the blooming job, but because we got shelled that night, you know, we had dug a trench under this wood, and one of the sergeants and somebody else, they got shrapnel on the other field, and that was the night before we moved. But then they had orders to move, because the Germans, they could see them coming across the fields up towards Cassell, and they told us we could raid, go down and help ourselves to the wine down in the wine cellar of the chateau.
Yeah.
And it was we all went down there, and this was all this blue and red, horrible red wine. We had armfuls of it in the back of the recovery wagon. We never drunk any of it, because it was all that horrible, what's name. But anyway, before that, in the afternoon, before that, one of the tanks, we'd just done something to it in this, I forget what we'd done to it. But anyway, this Lieutenant Logan, he was going out on patrol, and he took the tank out on patrol. He hadn't been gone very long before he was killed.
Really?
Yeah, we'd only been talking to him just a little while ago. And his grave is up in the cemetery at Cassell.
So that was the first death of
the only one I had anything to do with was that sergeant. Of course, then that night we had to move everybody for themselves. We had to go to Dunkirk, at least that's what they told us. Well, we weren't actually, that was wrong. The unit had gone up to a place called West Capel, which is outside Dunkirk. And we had to follow to get up there. You see, but when we got along the road, there was a main road, there was everything coming down this road, tanks and vehicles and everything you could think of.
Oh, yes, coffee or tea?
A black coffee and one sugar.
And coming down this road with all this traffic, and we couldn't get up there, you see, and there was a truck pulled up alongside of us, because I got out and never went up to this crossroad to see what was going on. And this bloke said, I told him, well, you'll never get up there, mate. He said, they're all making for Dunkirk. The Belgians have laid down their arms, and that's it. So he said, do you want any fags? And I said, yeah, but they just raided a naffy that had packed it in, you know. Anyway, then our officer decided that we had to make for Dunkirk. Well, instead of going down the same road as what the other blokes were doing, he decided to go across the other way. See, and of course, we got along there some way, and some bloke stopped us, and he said, where do you think you're going? And he said, we told him where we were. He said, well, you better turn around, because you're going into the Jerry's out there. And so he turned around, and in that turning round, the blooming store wagon got ditched. And our kit was in there, you see, so we all jumped in to get our kit, and there was two of the 5 and 4 were asleep in there. And, of course, then we left that wagon there and went on as with what we had. And then we outside, I don't know how far outside of Dunkirk it was, but we stopped for the night. And our officer went off. He didn't know what was going on, and he went off to see what he could do about getting the vehicles on the boat, as he thought, you see. And, of course, when he come back, he said, it's no good. He said, you've got to make for Dunkirk on foot. Leave the vehicles where they are. And Cyril Medlin and Ian Russell and myself, we had this BSA motorbike. And I was sat on the pillion on the back, you know, of course. Talk about it, but I'm a sore ride. But anyway, we moved away from there, the three of us, and we got to a canal, and a bloke said, right, that's it, you've got to walk from now onwards. And we walked up the Bray Dunes then, and that was it.
Yeah, so you got to the beach.
Yeah, well, when we were going across a field, and a mango field to start with, and some officer stopped us, and he said, what are you? So we told him we were RALC. Right. He said, I want you. He said, the jerrys are just over that hill. He said, I want you in that ditch. I said, sir, he must be mad. I was sitting over with him, and we walked on and left him, and he must have been a fifth columnist, you see.
Right.
And, of course, then we got in up into the main road of this village. Well, it's probably Bray Dunes, I suppose it was. And there was a crowd of RAF blokes marching along in front of us. And all of a sudden, they all turned round, and as they come by us, I heard one of them say, blimey, he said, 10 miles to Dunkirk and 20 miles to somewhere, is it out with this? He said, so I said to Sir, I said, out with this, I'm not, if that's that distance, I said, I'm not carrying this kit any farther, because I have my big pack and overcoat and tin helmet and blooming gas mask and rifle, you know. And I took my kit off because I had that already packed for leave with everything in it, you know. And I chucked this in the back of some 1,500 weight truck that was parked outside of one of these houses. And before I moved away hardly, some old froggy come out and he pitched the kit and took it on indoors. And then we moved on. Then we got on to the promenade of Bray Dunes.
Right.
When we got there, there was a crowd of our soldiers down by the water's edge. And I said to Sir Owen, I said, well, I'm going down and see who they are. And when I got down there, I realised who they were. So I said to him, I said, come on. I said, let's get amongst these. I said, RAOC attached to anybody, you see. Well, they were, actually. So anyway, we got in amongst them, and eventually we got on this old cargo boat, coaster, rather. And we got up to our neck, up to about this distance in water, you know.
Yeah. Was there a lot of action going on?
Not just at that time, but when we got on the boat, they started coming over because we were laying off of Bray Dunes. Dunkirk was just down there with all the oil tanks on fire, you know. And then eventually we got to... of course, when we went to get on the rowing boat, because the rowing boat come in and picked us up. When we got to the rowing boat, first of all, I had my overcoat and everything on, and boots and everything on, you see. And of course, I went to lift myself up. I couldn't move. Cause so by that time, I said to the bloke that put the rifle, he said, we don't want these bloody things, he said, and flung them in the water. And my rifle was over there now somewhere, I suppose. So anyway, I walked back to Cyril and Ian Russell, and I told him what had happened. So I took my coat off and flung it in the way, and just walked out and took my boots off and flung them around my neck, and walked out there. And the next rowing boat come in, and he said, now I want all your kit put in the bottom of the boat, he said, and then just heave over the side. And that was it. If the other bloke had been like that, it'd been all right, but it wasn't. And then he got out to this old U-Dale, what's the U-Dale coaster, and there was a rope ladder to climb up and onto the boat, you see. And that was it. And then they followed, because Russell and Medlin, they were single, and they wanted to make sure that I got on board, you see, because I was married.
Yeah.
And
that's nice. Yeah. Yeah. Lovely. Shall we have a stop?
Well, then, halfway through, no, about dinner time, I should imagine it, well, maybe before dinner, a stream of bombers come over, you know, dive bombers, and they started bombing the Howe. Well, they decided to move us, start moving out, so we just started moving, and one of these bombers come down and let go, you know, and there was I could hear them coming down, and I was on the, well, I can't explain which side, on the right-hand side of the boat, underneath the sort of awning across from the engine room. And I laid flat on the deck, you know, and heard this terrific bang and the scream of the bomb and that. And I looked out after it went off, and the water was up here somewhere, you know, and I thought to myself, blimey, he's turned us over, sort of thing. And anyway, everything went quiet, so I got up, and the engine had stopped, everything was stopped, and there was smoke coming out of the middle of the thing, and I thought, well, blimey, he's been it right in the middle, I suppose. So I took all my clothes off, you know, tunic and shirt, trousers and everything, and I knew I couldn't swim very much, so I was all ready to dive overboard, and one of the seamen come down from the top down into the engine room, and I heard him saying to somebody, right, start it up, Bill, let's get going, you know. So I calmly picked my clothes up and put it on again, you know, and this and my mate, he got under the steering gear at the back of the boat, you see, so I went over to him, and we see another one coming across, and I said, and I watched all four bombs leave the rack, and I said to Cyril, I said, blimey, one of these is bound to hit us, you know, and I never heard them go off, whether they were duds or what, I don't know, but they did have another go at our boat, but there was a hospital ship coming in as well, and whether he tried to avoid the hospital ship and hit us, I don't know, but we never hit either of us. But the actual boat we were on had a hole through the side, right through the side, and there were 7 killed and 77 injured on that side. And young Ian Russell, he was stood up there with his overcoat on, with amongst all these blokes that were injured, killed rather, and all he had was a little bit of shrapnel on his overcoat. He was dead lucky. And yet there were 7 killed and 77 injured around him. And of course, the thing was with that coaster, it was just one big hole, you know. And I remember looking down in there before we started, and it was full up with people. I wouldn't have got down there myself, but they were all down in there, hundreds of them, because there was 900 on the boat altogether. And I thought to myself then, blimey, if a bomb was to go down in there, it'd kill a lot of them. And it didn't. It pitched alongside of the boat. Well, then we decided to move on to England. At that time, it was just like a mill pond, the water was. And we got over, and then by the time we got over to Deal, it was dark, you know, about 11 o'clock. We'd had no food because they never had nothing on board, you know. And they said, well, they just had this anchor there for the night. And then we were sat on the deck with our hands like this, you know, on our knees.
I'm just going next door, but one, they bought these for
Okay.
for just stop that baby next
Robert
door.
Lockyer, end of reel two.
Oh, sorry.